When I first came to town in 1980, the then Karasotis brothers that owned the theater invited me over and said, we've got this old Wurlitzer. Would you take a look at it? And I had no knowledge of who might have taken care of it, what its condition was or anything. And I remember looking at it and was so frightened by what I saw. It was just an absolute wreck. And I naively at the time said, oh, it might cost you upwards of $30,000 to restore this organ. And I'm just so glad they didn't say, okay, do it for that much money. Because it the organ really required complete removal and complete restoration. In fact, one of the fellows that has acted on our behalf as a consultant during this project told us, this is, of course, after we had done all of our work. He said, you know, John, this organ could have very easily wound up in the dumpster for as much work as was really required to bring this instrument back to life. And I certainly appreciated that, having gone through the process of restoring it all this last year. We were supposed to originally have had the organ done last November. And if this had been any other organ of any other kind of manufacture, of any other condition that we'd ever worked on, we would have been done by the time that we said we'd be done, and everything would have been fine. One of the things about this organ that has really perplexed me personally and us collectively at my company is that you take one step forward, and then you have to take two steps backwards. You don't get very far doing a dance like that. When we first saw the organ, it was unplayable. You could turn the blower on and you'd get wind up in the organ, but it was pouring out of all of the reservoirs. It was pouring out of the wind trunks, out of the chests, everything. You could barely get a note to sound at all. And so we thought, okay, if we replace all of the perishable materials, all the leather, all the felt, all the valves, re-leather all the wind regulators, everything, and get everything to a new condition, then this organ ought to play. Sounds reasonable. That's been the case with every other instrument we've ever restored or rebuilt before. Well, so we got that done. Last summer, we were finished with that first round of work in July, and we started to set the organ up in our shop, in the erecting area. And when we first put wind in it, and we actually had a blower that produced the right amount of pressure, and we put wind in the organ, the pipes were on the chest, and almost every note ciphered, meaning that the notes played when you weren't playing the keys. Now, that's not a very good condition. That's probably the anathema for an organ builder, is to have the organ cipher, to have pipes just play. Well, we had to take everything apart again, and we found that there were very hidden cracks in the wind chests themselves, which allowed high-pressure wind to simply seep into the toe holes of the pipes. No matter how well the valves closed over their openings, and no matter how beautiful the leather work was that we had done, it was almost all for naught. And this is why our consultant said this organ could have very easily wound up, just as easily wound up in the dumpster as wound up being restored. So we basically took everything apart again, shimmed, filled cracks, filled splits, one thing after another of damage that we had no idea was in this organ and that you wouldn't normally expect. So little by little, we got the organ back on wind. We got it playable in the shop. It sounded really good. We had some concerns about, however, the anecdotal information we'd received from the various previous organists and some of Warren York's friends that had tried to resuscitate the instrument during the last 20 years of their heroic volunteer ministrations to this instrument. And anecdotally, we had been told that the organ never had enough bass. And we started to ask ourselves, why was this the case? The organ was installed in 1921 by Rudolf Wurlitzer in, I think it was November 28th or something like that. In 1924, they put another set of pipes in the organ because it was obvious that the organ was too soft for this big theater. In 1928, they put 16-foot pitch pipes in the organ, three sets of 16-foot pitch pipes in the organ. And really from about that time on, the urban legend was that there really was never enough bass in the organ and nobody could really figure out why. We had done, when we took the organ out, and while my tonal director, Brian Davis, had all the pipes in the shop, we did some organ archaeology, if you will, because none of the regulators were back on the original factory pressures. They were all cattywampus. Nothing matched up what Wurlitzer said it should have been. We also found that pipes weren't playing on properly on the factory pressures that were all written in the factory logs. Virginia Theater, Opus 490, main organ wind pressure, 10 inches. You know, it was all there. And we came to realize that over time, volunteers had tried to do in order to make the organ louder was that they'd actually damaged the pipes in order to try and make them speak louder. And the problem was that the organ never got enough wind from the blower. From 1921, that 90-year-old problem had never been troubleshot. You know, our consultant never told us that this wind trunk from the basement was any problem. He said you might need another fan in the blower, but there was never an indication that the wind trunk itself was too small. So, with that information in hand, as we are now ready to reinstall the organ, and in our shop, we replicated a bigger trunk, and everything was happy. What a thought. We said to the theater, you know what, we need to put a 12-inch diameter trunk in as opposed to an 8-inch diameter trunk. And now the organ has bass that it never had before. The pipes are playing on the proper pressures. One of the sort of touchstone sounds of a theater organ is created when you actually shake the wind. You know, if you're a singer, there's a vibrato that people sing with. It's a sort of a natural tremulant in the voice. Well, that is actually built in into the mechanical systems of a theater organ, and so the pipes have this sort of undulating tone to them. And it takes more volume of wind to be able to make this happen. And it used to be that, according to anecdotal information by, in fact, Dave Schrader, who you interviewed at the theater and has been helping us out, he remembers that when you'd play full organ, the tremulants would stop working. And if you really played big chords on full organ, the pitch would start to sag. That's because there wasn't enough wind. And the blower was perfectly fine. And in the 60s, some volunteers put a bigger blower in thinking that would take care of it, but it was always the main wind trunk that was the problem. So now the organ is reinstalled. It is now acclimating itself to the drier environment in the theater, but it's acclimating itself pretty well. We've been able to accommodate any of the motion of the old sugar pine components that were made so that so that it will be reliable over seasonal changes. You figure that poor instrument, it's an antique. It's 90 years old. And it's just had the equivalent of major open heart surgery. And a couple of days after it's gone under the knife, it's being expected to do a tap dance in front of everybody at the theater on Saturday. Basically, that's it.
First analogy I'm hearing from this is that in the past efforts to repair were like putting what would work into a car to get it running at the mm-hmm. time, but with not the with the incorrect parts.
You know, kind of. I think that one of the difficulties that all the really well-intended, heroic volunteers faced during the time that they tried to make the organ better is they really didn't have the ability to take the organ out of the chamber and work on it in a shop. The chamber was so cramped, and it's very, very full. If you've been up in the chamber, you can see there's not really much room for a human being to get to the little places that you might need to regulate various things. The fact that there were fundamentally things wrong that since the time the organ was put in 1921, you wouldn't assume that those various things would be wrong. You would assume that, for example, the perishable materials are bad, or this or that needs regulation or rebuilding. But when you get the organ put back in and you've done everything according to factory specs and you find that basically the main wind trunk running from the basement up to the organ is 30% too small, that's something you wouldn't know to look for. You know, unless you were a professional organ builder and did some real empirical testing.
I could use some organ 101 here. The trunk, the size of that's is that going from the blower to up to the, you know, you were talking about the sizes. Mm-hmm. Is that, where is that physically located?
Physically, the blower is in the basement of the theater.
I saw the blower, but what do we have to have replaced? You said
it's actually the physical pipe. that runs from that blower room up into the organ chamber, two stories up. It used to be made out of galvanized zinc. It was 8 inches in diameter. And now the trunk that we've installed is 12 inches in diameter. It's made out of very thick PVC tubing. And that way, the wind is actually pretty quiet. You don't hear it roaring around that pipe like you did with the old duct that was there. One of the things to remember, too, is that that pipe that runs from the blower room up to the organ has to be completely airtight because it's filled with compressed air, basically, and is then conducted into the organ. So it can't leak. It's not like a heating or an air conditioning system, those ducts where they put duct tape around the seams to, you know, keep the thing from maybe making a lot of noise. No, this had to be very carefully manufactured by our guys and then installed. The theater actually had to have workmen from the park district come in. Actually, it was from, I think, a special company that deals with drilling holes in concrete. And they had to actually enlarge the hole in the floor, the poured concrete floor of the chamber, from 8 inches to 14 inches so that we could send this big pipe up in there and then clamp it into place.
So you talked about Carasotas that first showed it to you mm-hmm. some time ago? When was that?
Oh, that had to have been back in 1980.
Okay. And so, I mean, you've done other work, not this extensive, in years prior?
We've never worked on this organ.
Okay. You've just obviously been very aware of it and looked at
sure.
it before.
And in fact, in 1980, they asked me to look at it. I didn't realize that at the time there had been work done on the organ in the 70s by amateur volunteers. It was in such terrible condition that basically I ran screaming from the building thinking, oh, dear, you know, the can of worms you would open just by trying to do anything with this without taking it completely out of the theater so that you could have it all in the shop and get it to a baseline where you knew it would operate in the shop. That's one thing that we thought was extremely important with this organ, is to make sure it all played properly in the shop first, so that way we knew that our work was good, and that then when we got it in the theater, if things changed, it would be a result of maybe the climate being a little drier in the theater than in our shop, and so, or the temperature being different, and so we would know how the organ is reacting to that, and we could address those problems as they happened.
So is this the first time it's been physically removed to
yes.
for okay.
Yes, this is the first time it's ever had any major work done on it since it was built in 1921. There were some tonal alterations that were made in an attempt to make the organ louder, and those attempts actually did some damage to the pipes that we had to restore.
Duct taping here and there along those lines. Over the years, prior to what you've done? Or?
There was a fair amount of duct tape in the organ when we got into it, yes.
And not necessarily implying that was all that was, but patching here and there to get by and tell what
yeah,
you had done.
Yeah, patching here and there. And one of the things, too, that the old organ in its original installation suffered from was its switching system. That is the relay that allowed you to press a key on the organ with a particular set of pipes selected, and it would then play that correct note in the organ chamber. The relay that allowed this to happen was basically an electro-pneumatic computer. It was a big XY machine that operated by pneumatics and old-fashioned electric contacts made out of phosphor bronze. And those contacts and that system basically was in very, very bad shape. So we opted to replace that relay with a modern solid-state computer-style relay. And that way we knew that the entire electrical system of the organ would not only meet current codes, which is a rather important thing to do in a public building, but we also knew that there would not be any problems with playing a particular note and having that specific pipe play. That was one of the things that the folks that came before really had to fight, you know, in order to try and keep it playing. But you're right. There was a fair amount of duct tape on the regulators and on the reservoirs. There were a lot of stripped screws on the undersides of the wind chests themselves. The organ leaked wind terribly. Now, when you turn the organ on in the theater, you hear a little bit of hissing coming from the organ chamber, but it's nowhere near the rushing mighty wind that actually blew the curtains in front of the organ chamber before. It was that bad. But one of the things that had been done in an attempt to make the organ louder, and it, unfortunately a mistaken attempt, was that in a set of pipes, which is called a tuba horn, there are metal flaps at the top of the pipes that are cut out of the pipe metal itself. And those are supposed to just be opened a little bit or rolled down just a little bit in order to give the pipe its proper color of sound. And then you tune the pipe with a brass wire at the bottom of the pipe, which actually physically lengthens or shortens the tongue of the pipe, makes it play. It's just like an oboe or a woodwind pipe. You know, the length of the tongue and the length of the resonator determine the pitch and the color. Well, in order to make a reed pipe like this louder, if you tune the pipe flatter on the wire, but then roll, you know, open that scroll up more and more, the sound gets louder and louder. Well, unfortunately, these flaps were not only rolled down past the point that they should have been, but they actually ripped open the pipes to the point where the metal itself on the resonators was badly torn in a lot of places. And so the pipe was playing louder, but not with the proper tone color at all. So we actually made giant wooden cones, which we call mandrels, which we inserted into the pipes. They were the exact same taper as the pipes themselves, and then were able to reform these resonators around our specially made mandrels, and then solder up the torn pipes themselves to the point where they are back to original condition, and they sound wonderful. They're not as loud as they were before, but that's okay because we've made some additions to the organ with some louder trumpets and brass kinds of sounds.
Are you aware of any organ that is this old elsewhere that is actively being used?
Oh, sure.
Or older, perhaps.
Older. In fact, we've just restored a really beautiful mechanical action pipe organ at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Shenoah, Illinois. It was built in 1905 and had fallen on some bad, hard times. But the priest who is there, Father Carl Lopresti, a wonderful man, always knew that this organ had a really neat voice if it could just play properly. And so we restored that organ. It took us 5 stages to do it as they raised the money, the last stage of which was restoring the pipes that are in the facade of the organ, in the front of the case, this beautiful stenciling and beautiful applique work and gold leaf and different colors and bands of color. We just finished that last year, and it's tremendously successful. And that organ plays beautifully. You can sit down to it and just play it like it's a modern pipe organ, and it just feels great. There are, in this community, there is a 1924 Ernest M. Skinner organ at Wesley Methodist Church, just right a couple of blocks from your studios here. That organ used to live in the Smith Recital Hall until its replacement was purchased by the state of Illinois in 1965. We've restored that organ as much as one can restore something that's in a different location. There are plenty of old pipe organs that are still doing really good service all around central Illinois and here in Champaign-Urbana, in addition to newer ones as well.
Have you disclosed, or is the park district, how much this work has cost?
I'll be happy to tell you. Our contract with the park district was for about $145,000. We have had the privilege of donating in-kind labor on top of that amount in the amount of approximately $45,000. And if you can read between the lines, that's what it took for us to really do this project really, really well, given the hidden damage that was in the organ that we just simply couldn't have possibly foreseen. But we really wanted to make sure this organ was in as perfect condition as possible. It is our municipal pipe organ. You know, it is Champaign-Urbana's own pipe organ, and it's one of the very, very few Wurlitzer theater pipe organs that remains in its original theater installation. There aren't very many in the United States like that. And so it was a matter of all of our guys, a matter of real, real civic pride.